Boy, this time of the month, this time of June, actually, late June, isn't it a great time to be a gardener? Everything is growing like crazy. And unfortunately, that also can include the weeds as well. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk. We're going to get some great advice and figuring out about weeds and other things as well with Barb Larson. Barb's been with us many a time. She is a horticulture educator with UW Extension in Kenosha County, has a wealth of information to share, and always happy, I think, to come by and join us. Hi, Barb.
Of course, I'm very happy to be here. Although today I don't sound like myself.
Well, neither, I don't either. We both are sounding a little bit different. My voice is down there, a little bit more like Carl Schmitz. And here's Barb with a sore throat. Well, it's not really
No,
sore.
It's not sore. It just sounds like it is. It's just like a laryngitis I've had all week. So.
All right. Well, tell you what, we have lots of people online, but let's talk a bit about weeds for just a minute. A weed, you know, it's just a plant that's growing where we don't want it.
That's right. So I've certainly had people that have called me, and when we identify it, we find out that for many people it might be a desirable plant. Sometimes they're even plants that we intentionally put in, and all of a sudden it's a little more aggressive in the garden than we may want it. So now it's become a weed. So there's all sorts of different things, and it just seems to be a good year for weeds. I think all this water and rainfall, and interestingly, we've also had people where there have been some plants that haven't made it through the winter, so some of the other things are kind of filling in there. Sometimes it's a plant that they planted, but sometimes it's something they didn't plant, and it's showing up. So
we're getting
a lot of calls on
plants. Been down on my hands and knees in the front flower garden area there, and it's a lot more than past years, it seems like. Anyway.
Well, I think it's all the rainfall that we've had, and so everything's just taken off, and which is great for most of our plants. So, you know, you mentioned, I'm guessing if you're on your hands and knees in the garden, you're probably doing like I am, which is hand pulling, which you know, for a lot of them, that's probably the best way to try to manage or control them.
Yeah.
And especially after they start coming up.
And, you know, some of it, I think it depends a little bit on the weed. I mean, there are certain weeds that are more of a problem than others, I think.
Sure, and certainly some of those annuals. So that's the first thing I do when I try to identify the weeds is it an annual or is it something that's coming back from the root system, a perennial type of plant? If it's an annual, I know I can either hoe it or pull it out, and it's probably not going to come back, or I can try to mulch it. If it's a perennial, then depending on the kind of perennial, again, I can still probably try to hand control it, and that's usually my first choice because I want to try to reduce my chemical use. If it's pretty pervasive or it's a real problem, I could try everything from trying to cover it up with plastic, cardboard, something like that, to actually, we talk about smothering, but it's actually excluding the light from the plants and hopefully kill them that way. Or for people who aren't opposed to those herbicides, using some sort of an herbicide on it.
Yeah, I bought some extra mulch this year.
Yep.
And the weeds kept, you know, were coming through the first layer of mulch. I thought, you know what, I'm just going to get some more mulch. And I went.
Right, and absolutely, that's, you know, we love organic mulches for lots of reasons. And one of the main ones is it cuts down on those weeds.
Yeah. We have three different types. There's broadleaf weeds and there's.
Well, there's grass. There's the grasses. So the monocot weeds. So members of the grass family and related kinds of things.
Yeah.
And then the broad leaves are basically pretty much everything else in there. Yeah.
And so for identifying weeds, there's a.
There is a great Mark Renz, who's one of our weed specialists for UW Extension, UW Madison, has put together a weed ID site, an online site. And you can, I think there's a link off the Facebook page.
Yeah, we've got it off our page.
But you can also Google Wisconsin, UW Madison weeds. In your weed identification, you should probably be able to get to the page that way. The kind of key for it would be to, as Mark says, don't put too many of the, it's going to ask you questions. Does it have this? Does it have that? And if you try to answer too many of those, you actually narrow the number of possibilities too far.
Ah.
So Mark usually recommends that you only pick a few of the characteristics and the ones you know for sure. And then you'll get up a series of photos and you can try to identify it from
that.
That
makes it easier anyway.
Right, right. Yeah. So plant identification can sometimes be challenging. So if you can't identify it that way, try a good book, whatever you like for things. I have different ones that I prefer. If your extension office can often help you with some of them. If you're bringing in a sample, which is what the best way to do is bring in probably, 4 to 6 inches. So we have stem and the leaves. So we know the brand, the leaf pattern on it. And ideally, you also bring it in when it's in flower, because plants are actually classified or traditionally were classified according to the flowers and the flower structure. So that's how most of our identification characteristics are.
Barb Larson, our guest today, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. All our lines are filled right now. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can also go to my Facebook page if you have a question, and maybe you've got a photo of a plant. We can try to identify it via a photo at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the name of the Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. We have Marjorie in Madison up with a question. Hi, Marge. Marjorie, are you there? Let's see. Am I doing something wrong? I don't think so. Oops. Well, let's try Bruce in Algoma. Bruce, hi.
Good morning. Good morning. I've seen commercial growers of raspberries and asparagus using herbicides. At least I think they do. Is that something a residential owner? I've tried mulches. I've tried pulling them, of course, and I'd like to expand those two beds. But what I see is not pretty.
I think you're talking about expanding the beds. I think the key when you're expanding is to make sure that you control any of the perennial problems, such as the quack grasses and some of those kinds of things, before you even start planting and expanding, so that you're not starting out with a soil that is laden with a lot of weeds in there to begin with. So you might try everything from covering it for a year with plastic to, try to that heat to kind of solarize it a little bit. That'll kill some of the seeds. To also, it sounds like you're not opposed to chemicals, so that you can certainly use things like glyphosate and other things that kills anything that's green and growing. If you're in your existing beds, you always want to be careful, read your labels on anything that you're using in and around a food crop. So make sure it's labeled that it's okay, it's safe to use around a food crop. If you're very careful, sometimes you can mix up the herbicide and then the right amount. And then I usually put it in like a jar or something and use a foam paintbrush and just paint the herbicide on the weeds, avoiding the desirable plants. So you might try that if you haven't had luck with the mulches and everything. If it's really, really, really bad, then you're really probably best off starting all over again.
Yeah.
And starting with a fresh plot and controlling your weeds right off before you even start.
Yeah.
Okay, that does make sense. And I guess I've kind of come to that that crossroad where I think especially with the raspberries, we're going to start over.
Yeah, all right. And sometimes you're better off. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Makes sense. Good luck, Bruce. Thank you. Let's go back to Marjorie in Madison. I think we got her this time. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've just been spending the last 3 hours trying to get the Canadian thistle out of my garden, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions to keep it out.
Canada thistle.
If it's Canada thistle, unless you dug down really, really, really deep, you didn't get all the root system. So the problem.
How deep does it go down?
Sometimes up to 4 to 6 feet. and it spreads.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So that's, which is why Canada thistle is such a major weed problem is once it gets in. So first of all, I hope that it is Canada thistle because there are all sorts of different kinds of thistles. So before you panic too much, you know, get a weed or a plant ID book or go online to make sure it's Canada thistle. And usually with Canada thistle, you can keep after it. So as soon as it starts to resprout, just try to immediately cut it off. But it's going to take a long time to get to the point where you get all the resources out of that extensive root system that those tend to have. So most of the time for Canada thistle, the control methods are by herbicides.
And which one?
That I don't remember off the top of my head. Kind of most of the standard ones may not work. We do have some, if you go on the Extension publication site, which is thelearningstore.uwex.edu, and into the weeds section, I know there's information on weeds, and it will include control of Canada thistle.
You really want to get the right one.
Yeah, and you've got to get the right herbicide for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good
well,
luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
really,
I'm sorry I didn't have easy news
better
for you.
News. We had a Facebook question from Susan. What do I do with large sections of yards that have all turned to weeds? I have quack grass, a lot of things. I can't identify one area with bishop's weed. Sounds like a real jungle you got there, Susan.
Maybe you like bishop's weed as a ground cover. well, you know, our turf specialists always would recommend if over 50% of the lawn is weeds, then it really should be renovated, which means you're not going to like this answer either, starting all over again. And basically, you're going to kill out the lawn in about the middle of August and then either reseed or resod. Now, if you sod, you could do it earlier, but, you know, if September, early September is a great time to redo a lawn. And truly, you have to look at how much of it is all weeds. What is your tolerance? I mean, yeah. You know, a lot of us look at that if it's green and I can mow it, it counts as a lawn. Mm-hmm. And so you have to decide what is the importance for you.
I've mentioned this on the show before, but basically we have a pretty good sized backyard, and I've just... because of a 10-year-old and 11-year-old and a 12-year-old in the neighborhood where they're playing soccer back there. What's the difference? You know, I cut it high. I mean, I try to take care of it, but there's weeds, lots of weeds in there, and I'm just not going to worry about it.
And I pretty much have the same philosophy, and I've always, I don't have kids anymore, but, you know, now I still have the dogs and everything, and if it's green, and I can mow it. And, you know, yes, we do mow it high, and we do fertilize twice a year and, you know, some of those kinds of things. But otherwise, we try to,
It's on its own.
Yeah.
On its own. Oh, boy. Somebody in Facebook, Patrick, said, why don't they make a weed ID into an app? You know, an app would be nice.
You know, there probably are some. I haven't hunted around for one. So if you find one, let us know.
Yeah, we should look that up. Judith will probably have it before the end of the show. She's probably already got something. Of course, he's talking about the University Extension one because that is a really good.
Right. Well, and if she's wondering with apps for extension, you know, it's something we'd all like to do, but there is a cost for production on some of those things.
Yeah.
So. We're kind of not quite that far. If you do look for apps, the one thing I would, like anything else, try to make sure that it's one that has plants in the Midwest. Because if it comes out of the Southwest, it's probably not going to have a lot of our plants.
Allison in La Crosse shares a driveway with her neighbors, and they paid a company to plow and salt the driveway all winter, which means, unfortunately, a large amount of salt was dumped onto her flower beds. Many of the ground cover plants and perennials didn't return this year. And when I've planted new seeds or seedlings, they've not thrived. The weeds, however, are doing well. Anything I can do to mediate the salt in the soil?
Yeah, well, and I would guess usually what we recommend for is to try to wash that salt
out,
water. And a lot of water. But part of the problem with salt, or the main thing with the sodiums, is they actually cause the soil structure to collapse. So the airspace decreases between the soil particles. And weeds often will grow in that little bit more compacted or poor quality soil versus our garden plants. I think La Crosse has had a lot of rain. Certainly most of the state has. So if it hasn't washed out that extra salt and you're having mostly weeds and you can't grow anything, I would look at, well, my first thing would be try to work a lot of compost into it.
Yes.
To try to improve the structure that way. And if adding lots of compost doesn't help, then you may have to even replace the soil in that area.
Barb Larson, our guest today, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we have a fun rebroadcast for you of a recent Garden Talk program with Ed Lyon of Allen Centennial Gardens. He had some great advice to share on having a beautiful garden bed and something to enjoy throughout the season. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, Barb Larson is helping us identify those pesky weeds so we can control them more effectively, and talking about other issues as well with you. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Those lines are filled. You can go to my Facebook page if you like, post a question there. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Don in Rice Lake's been waiting a while. Well, thanks for waiting, Don. Hi.
Well, thank you for the program. And my question isn't about weeds, but I was hoping maybe I'd get an answer.
Sure.
I've got a row of flowering crab trees that I planted, and what's happened this year, from all the deep snow, I think that like moles have tunneled underneath, and every one of those trees have got the bark eaten off like 2.5 inches up.
Yep, all the way around?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I think you want to go visit your local garden center and replace those trees.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was probably vole damage if it was underneath the snow. We had a lot of different kinds of rodent damage all over the state, under the snow, and then also on top of the snow with the rabbits and everything over the wintertime. And because the cambium or the growing area is right underneath the bark, that's that green part when you scrape off the bark. If the bark gets taken off all the way around, it basically that'll kill the tree above. You know,
it isn't green. It isn't chewed to the green. It's just the very outer.
Well, if it gets the outer, that's still probably done enough damage to do it, or there's enough damage in there that the trees really won't do well. So even if they survive, so, you know, we talk about they have to girdle or go all the way around, but certainly trees where the damage is significant only halfway around, or, you know, is enough that the trees may survive, but they are not going to be good quality trees. They're going to struggle. They're going to be more susceptible to insects and diseases.
See, this year they've got some leaves on, but it's scattered.
Yep, yep. Because they basically had some of those starches up higher up in the tree enough to push some leaves out. But that's it. You know, don't put the time, effort, money into that. Instead, replace the trees.
And probably then you want to think about how you're going to protect them next winter.
Right. Good point, Larry. So definitely you want to think about putting some sort of a protection, a cylinder or something around them. In the fall, you can also use tree wrap in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to make sure that then you remove it. Excuse me, in the spring.
Yes.
Following. Replace and then protect them in the fall.
All right.
But I thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Appreciate it. Cheryl in Verona, hello.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Again, it's not a weed question, although I'm out in the garden.
That's okay. Right, I don't need to have all weed questions.
Okay. This year, for the first time, I'm trying to grow broccoli and cauliflower in a garden that last year I successfully grew Brussels sprouts, squash, winter and summer squash. And I started the seeds inside and then put them in the ground about 7 weeks ago, the broccoli and cauliflower. And the leaves are about 2 feet, maybe 2 feet tall.
Okay.
But there's no evidence of broccoli or no evidence of cauliflower starting. And I've never grown them before, so I don't know if I'm impatient or if someone suggested maybe there's too much nitrogen in the soil. But I successfully grew Brussels sprouts in the same area last year.
Well, and actually we were even talking, the horticulture educators and the specialists have a Friday morning phone conference where we discuss what's going on in the state. And one of the things that actually came up this morning was with the amount of rainfall we've had, it actually will wash or leach a lot of the nitrogen out of the soil.
Oh,
so I really kind of doubt that it's high nitrogen. So I would be patient. I have a feeling, you know, it's been, everything is behind. We've had some warmer temperatures, but we've had quite a bit of overcast. We've had a lot of rain. The soils have stayed fairly cool in certain parts of the state, certainly along, Kenosha, along the Lake Michigan area. It's been overcast and cool the entire spring and early summer.
Yeah.
So everything is way behind.
Okay.
So
I'd say just
patience here.
Yep. Hang in there.
All right.
And actually watch for, everybody should kind of watch for leaves being a little yellow and especially the older leaves, which may indicate you may need to add a little nitrogen.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, Cheryl. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And Craig in Oshkosh, hello to you.
Okay, here's my question. 3 years ago, we had a flood come, this may be related or not, we had a flood come through and our whole garden got wrecked from the flood. After it dried up, things kind of survived a little bit, but we started getting what I believe is mildew on all my cucumbers, pickles, and squash. Last year, it came back, or the last two seasons, it came back. So this is for 3 years in a row, we had the same issue where all the leaves turned white and everything died off about halfway through the season. Is that probably mildew, the whiteness of all the leaves?
Yeah, white, powdery looking.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like mildew, and they're all very susceptible to it. I don't think the flood had anything to do with it. The spores kind of blow around. Mildew is actually, that kind of high humidity rather than necessarily rainfall with it. So what we usually recommend is to, first of all, I don't know if your garden's big enough, but you want to try to crop rotate a little bit, good cleanup. So anytime you clean everything out, you don't want to, especially if you have a disease, you probably don't want to compost it. Instead, you want to either burn it or bury it or send it to a landfill. And then try to spread your plants apart so that you get better airflow through them so that the leaves dry off. And then there are some preventative types of fungicides. We have a really good fact sheet on that. Brian Huddleston, our plant pathologist, has written. So if you actually either go to hort.uwex.edu and just put powdery mildew in, that fact sheet should pop right up and you'll be able to do the look at trying to put a preventative on it.
Is it possible to get rid of it forever?
No.
No,
once you get it, you're stuck with it?
Well, in the air. It just comes from all over the place.
Yeah, mildew is really pretty common, and it can be in some, even in large commercial plantings, can be a real problem. So, it's one of those things that if the weather conditions are right, you're more likely to get it. If we'd have a really dry, windy year, doesn't mean their plants wouldn't get it, but they may be less likely to get it. And I don't remember absolutely, but if I remember correctly, there's not a lot of the squashes and stuff. I don't know that we have any that are particularly resistant to mildews. So we can't go that way, which is the other way we often recommend.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Craig.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Judy in Grafton. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
My problem is slugs. I've been harvesting beautiful Swiss chard and lettuce and kale up until now, and now I'm beginning to see some slugs. And I don't want to use, you know, the chemicals. And I've got eggshells and I've got coffee grounds around my plants.
Nope, those don't work.
They don't work?
Nope, those don't work. And I don't like slug treatments either, you know, the chemical ones either, the baits, that kind of stuff. Couple of options for you to do. One is you can always just put flat boards and things down, and then they'll crawl underneath those. And in the morning, you can pick the boards up and just smash the slugs or scrape them off into soapy water or something like that to kill them.
Okay.
You'll get a whole bunch at once.
Yeah, you will.
Okay.
You can also use beer. Yeah, I think the beer bait works really well. So use a small container, put really cheap stale beer into it. The slugs crawl in and they drowned in the beer. They're very happy. They're in Wisconsin slugs. This might work better than anything else. And then there's a product called diatomaceous earth, which is you want to look for the one that's listed for slug or control or for animals or insect control or plants or with insect control. And it can be sprinkled on the plants. But I would go with just the boards or the beer instead.
That's a quick and easy way.
Yep.
Okay, one quick question. I have some cabbage plants, and, you know, they're coming beautifully, but those big leaves are so low. Will I damage the plants if I pop off those big leaves that are hanging on the ground? I mean, would that deter the slugs?
Well, I mean, are they heading up otherwise nicely? I mean, those outer leaves do help kind of protect them a little bit.
And they pull in a lot of sunshine.
Yeah. Right, okay, yeah, help make
I'll
it sweeter.
They
yeah, they pull a
All
lot
right.
of sunshine.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm going to get out a board and some beer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan. And, of course, the other thing, you know, if you've got a, you know, mulch is great for weeds, but it's also good for the,
those
for the slugs.
Well, and, you know, slugs love this weather.
It's great weather for slugs. Man, oh, man. Well, we have a note from Peggy, who wonders how to control weedy growth beneath her bird feeder. I wind up with so many seeds from, or hulls.
Right.
Under mine that I, you know, sort of, it's a mulch. It's kind of a mulch. And once in a while, one of those sunflower seeds turns into a sunflower. But most
Well, you know, the interesting thing about sunflowers is they're what are called allelopathic, meaning they prevent other plants from growing around them. So sometimes if you get a lot of those sunflowers, kind of like the black walnuts do.
Yeah.
So if you get a lot of those sunflower seeds down, you may get some weeds up, but maybe not very many. But yeah, I'm kind of with her, especially with this. We were talking about the thistles earlier. When you feed thistle seed, then you can get thistles up. So, you can mulch or let itself mulch or scrape up that seed once in a while, I guess, too.
Susan on Facebook says, snow on the mountain, bishop weed is pure evil.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a variegated ground cover, and sometimes it will even revert to all green. I actually have, which I hope is kind of an interesting story. So many years ago, I was at a opening of a big garden center, a national kind of garden center, and they had the local extension person come in to answer local questions, but they also had a nationally known speaker come in. Well, this person was from the South. They weren't from the Midwest. So we got to talking about different things, and he was recommending that Bishop's Cap and, you know, the snow on the mountain was a great ground cover. And I said, we don't want that here because it gets way invasive. And he said, in the South, it doesn't because it's heat sensitive. So I don't know if you've ever noticed, but on these plants, especially if we have a really hot, dry summer, they get a lot of brown spots and they'll kind of thin out a little bit. So in the southern part of the country, they're not a problem. But yeah, in the Midwest, they are. So.
That's kind of like lawns. There's a lawn in our neighborhood that half the lawn, one side of the sidewalk was zoysia grass planted and the other was... I think Kentucky blue, but you walk by and one side is white, you know, and the other side is green.
Well, then do they switch if it gets hot and dry? Then the bluegrass goes dormant and the zoysia's okay.
It's gotten better, but oh my goodness! Earlier on, I was like, oh, I bet you that homeowner's not happy.
Yeah.
We have another question from Aaron on Facebook about getting rid of Creeping Charlie. I tried some of the spray that hooks up to your garden hose. That didn't work. I tried Spectracide brand another time, and that seemed had some effect in turning the creeper spotty green and brown, but didn't control it. The application would be in a lawn along flower beds.
Yeah. So
some of it's timing.
Some of it's timing. Some research many years ago in Wisconsin said that if you spray when they're in bloom, you will have a little better chance of killing it back. And then another application in fall, usually September.
First frost.
Right. You can never get Creeping Charlie in one application. And we're actually finding it's getting harder and harder and harder to control. There are products that seem to be fairly useful with it. But it is getting really tough. And the problem is if it's along a flower bed, you're going to have to be careful not to get whatever you may spray into that flower bed.
Eric and Madison, and the other thing, I mean, I get down on my hands and knees for that stuff, too. It's hard in a lawn, but I've even done it. Not in this lawn. I've just let this one go. But my previous lawn, my daughter and I get her out there for a half hour. It was amazing how much we could get rid of out of the lawn. Now I don't bother. But then, and it took a long time for it to come back, you know. So, you know, you can't hand pull. If you spend an hour, you can pull a lot.
That's true. That's true.
In an hour.
That's true.
Eric in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I had a question about, with these past storms that we've had in Madison area this past week, I've got numerous, at least 200-year-old oak trees that are in our yard. They're beautiful trees, really healthy, but some of the branches came down, and so I had to get up with the chainsaw and actually cut them down and I know that it's not recommended to do pruning on oaks, especially I guess, except in January or February in the winter months. But I'm wondering, do I at this point just leave the portions just alone, or
when did you cut them?
I just cut them a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it's probably too long.
Yeah.
So you describe the situation when we do recommend pruning in the summertime, and that is if you have storm damage, because you do want to prune those branches off, those broken branches, back to either the trunk or to a side branch or something like that, so you have a good pruning cut so that it will heal better. Usually we do... And summer ones recommend some sort of, if you have to do it in those situations, trying to then, not absolutely immediately, but pretty quickly afterwards, try to cover those cut areas with something like an orange shellac or something like that to decrease the chance of insects coming in contact with that open pruning wound. Now that it's a couple of days later, I don't know if it makes that much difference.
Late.
Yeah.
Actually,
Larry's going too late.
There's been some research on that. We talked about this one day on the show that they were researching cutting into an oak and then timing to see how long it would take a picnic beetle to find it. And it was the 15 minutes.
Wow. Okay.
A picnic beetle was there in 15 minutes. So you really got to do it.
Yeah, and Larry mentions the picnic beetle because that's the one that we think is most often just on its little feet carrying and body carrying
and
that
apparently
disease.
They can smell or somehow sense the tree.
Yeah, well, they do. They sense that fresh cut.
There hasn't been any. I mean, I've looked at this cut in the last, you know, last few days, and I mean, it's a really clean cut. It's a really solid cut. I mean, the branch. I went right to the trunk. It's really solid. I'm not seeing any sort of anything that could be burrowing in at this point.
No. It's not that it burrows in. So the problem is that these insects carry the oak wilt disease. So it's
right.
They carry the fungus, and they are attracted to fresh pruning wounds. And so they land with the fungi on their bodies, and then it's taken into the plant that way. So that's why, you know, Larry's saying, you know, they're attracted within 15 minutes. You know, we're basically at the point where it's too late now. Don't worry about it. You did the right thing in cleaning up that that branch and the damage to it that you want to do.
Next time I would definitely be.
Then you want to cover.
I've got another branch that needs to come down.
Okay.
Soon, so I'll make sure to get.
I have that ready.
Shellac. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, orange shellac is what's usually recommended. It's kind of hard to find. So
is that at garden centers or?
You could try a garden center. You may have. You actually might have better luck at a hardware store or home store.
Okay. I'll look for that. Great. Thank you very
much. Okay, sure.
Yeah, thanks, Eric, for calling. Appreciate your call. Barb Larson, our guest today, she's a horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking today on this edition of Garden Talk with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Questions for her, give us a call. We've zeroed in a bit on weeds, but taking all kinds of other things as well at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And Arlene in New Berlin, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, and I hope to heck somebody can give me an idea of what to do. It's about weeds. I have a hill on the southwest side of my property, and I have these long stem things that come up that have little buttons where it'll flower if I don't cut the tops off, but they have thistles on their pricklers on their leaves. And the second one is a growth that looks like, and don't laugh because that's what it seems like to me, the leaves almost look like either a marijuana plant or a lily, but the leaves aren't those, for the lily, it's not those single, the drooping kind of, it stands up pretty straight. And I'm wondering whether I should, what kind of weed killer should I use? If I should call in a professional to take care of it, because I have 6 fir trees and 1 maple tree. And I can pull them out myself, but I'm 74 years old.
Okay. So it's possible it could be, there are lots of different thistles. It could be one of the thistles, but nothing is popping into my mind as to what it is. Is it possible for you to, you said you can pull them out. Can you take them into your county extension office?
Well, I live in New Berlin. I don't know where
it
is.
So you're in Waukesha County?
Yeah. And I know that I had someone come out last year to help me do some of my garden, and he said it was a weed. They get white stuff on top after the little buttons that are the flowers pop out. I'm trying to cut all the tops off so that I don't get them to blossom.
Yeah, I just really don't want to give you, especially an herbicide recommendation and without knowing what it is. In Waukesha County, your extension office is in the courthouse.
Okay.
So you could just pull a couple of those samples out and take them down to the courthouse. Call first. If you look under a Waukesha County UW extension, you should be able to get the phone number and go ahead and call them ahead of time.
The only reason I don't really want to use an herbicide is because of the evergreen trees that I have and the maple tree that's on the end. I'm afraid if I do any kind of spraying, I'm going to lose them.
Well, that's why we need to know what it is, and then yeah. when we know what it is, then we can make a better recommendation. And Kristen is the horticulture educator there, Kristen Krakowski, and she can help you. She or some of the master gardeners that help answer gardening questions can help out with that.
Yep, absolutely. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And so get to the courthouse or...
Yeah, and often in all of our counties, the county extension office is usually in one of the county, or a county building. So in Kenosha, we're not in the courthouse. We're in a different building in the center of the county. But you should be able to find it in the phone book. And they're there to help you. You know, I can make these guesses, it goes against our basics of, have to know what it is first before we make recommendations.
Bill in Dubuque, Iowa, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've been listening for a while, so now it's three things. You had two people ask questions about how to prevent seed weeds from growing under a bird feeder. Did you get to that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's your answer?
You put a screen under it? Okay, I build a screen, four-sided box-like with an open bottom, and you put a screen across the bottom, and you hang it from the bird cage, from the bird feeder, and all the surplus stuff that they kick around and gets knocked around lines up in your screen. And then the bottom feeders or ground feeders come and they eat it up. So you solve that problem. I don't have any problem with weeds.
And you don't waste seed. That's a great idea.
Yes, it really works very well. The other thing is your Creeping Charlie. Larry might want to do this. I get a little like a tweezers. You know the thing they use to pull ice cubes out of ice cube boxes?
Yeah.
Well, I put a little sponge, a small, very small piece of sponge on each side. And then I get a little can of knockout. What do you call it?
Roundup or
You're
something?
You're talking about glyphosate Roundup. Yep.
And you do it right after they bloom or right after your first frost, light frost.
Yep.
And what I use plastic to kill large areas. But the thing is, you got to get them, it takes a couple of years to get every little plant out of there. And with your tweezers, you can kill the individual tiny plants that are, not that when they're more sparse.
Yep. That's along the same line as what I was talking about with a foam paintbrush. Same idea.
Yeah.
Same idea, but with this, with the tweezers, it's more specific.
Okay.
Grass.
All right.
But anyway, the third thing was my question.
Okay.
I would like to know with foiler feeding. Do you know if I can get calcium? Is magnesium the same as calcium for tomato plants? And if so, if I make a solution, I was thinking of spraying the tomato plants with calcium, because when you get too much rain, the calcium is watered down to a point where you get the blossom end right. And if there's not enough rain, if it's dry, you ain't got enough water to pull it up into the plant. So I was thinking of foliar feeding with calcium. You think that might work?
Foliar
feeding with calcium. Well, that's what the commercial people do. And calcium is not the same as magnesium. They're two different ones, and they work differently in the plant. The problem is that the calcium does not move through the plant well. So, if the water flow through the plant is not, kind of a steady, even water flow or moisture flow through the plant, then the calcium doesn't move from the older parts of the plant out into the fruit. And that's why we get things like what causes the blossom end rot. So you're correct in that if it's really wet, where the roots are compromised, maybe they've got a little root rot or something, then the water flow doesn't go through as well. Or if it's too dry, it won't go through as well. Or if it's alternating too wet and too dry. So our first recommendation to prevent blossom end rot is always to, well, mulch and help to keep that soil evenly moist so that you keep the water flow kind of an even flow through the plant. If you have a continual problem with this, also sometimes with container tomatoes, that may be a bigger issue. You could use a foliar or plant feeding, particularly at the top and at the tomatoes on themselves, with a little calcium.
There you go. Thank you
very much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate your call. You know, that's one of the things about straw bales with tomatoes. I had no blossom end rot in those straw bales.
Interesting.
Tomatoes.
It keeps it moist enough then in the straw bales.
It's moist. Yeah. It's always moist in there, and it's just sort of constant. And I had no problems. I don't know if maybe there's somebody else who was using straw bales that did have problems with blossom end rot, but I haven't heard about it. So,
okay. Well, we'll see.
Jim and Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, Larry. You know, listening to you every day is just like going to class. I get so educated. I just, it's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
You talked to me a few times. Your guest mentioned something a little bit ago about sunflowers. A few years ago, I had my garden was all sunflowers. It was beautiful. My nephew put them all in for wedding pictures, and it was just amazing. I get lots of little sprouts popping up here and there. They don't bother me a bit. They, you know, either they get hold back in, or I leave them alone and they pop up. But I planted four rows of them this year right in the middle of, and all kinds of different varieties, right in the middle of all of my vegetable garden, so I could see just a nice, pretty sunflowers popping up. But next to it, my beans didn't really take off. And I think your guest said something about the sunflowers are like the walnut trees and will kill the plants around it. And that's my first question. And the second question is, I snipped off some of my walnut tree branches that are hanging over my driveway last night, and I'm wondering if I'm going to have a problem with the mold you're talking about with the oak trees. Just a couple, three branches here and there so they don't rub on the car windows, because, you know, my driveway, as I mentioned before to you, is lined up with, you know, solid walnut trees.
Okay.
All the way up there.
Okay. So let's answer that one first. Walnuts aren't susceptible to oak wilt. So that's
okay
not
there.
A concern. So I don't know, although we talk about how we know sunflowers do prevent some plants from growing around them, they're not quite as potent, for lack of a better term, as black walnuts tend to be. Especially this year, I'm more inclined to think that your beans aren't doing well because it hasn't been hot enough for them yet, now that you're up in Eau Claire.
Yeah.
And you've had so much rain and so much overcast.
Hmm. Okay.
So I would just, keep an eye on them. Keep that in the back of your mind. It might be possible, but I kind of doubt that that's what it is. I think it's more the weather.
So it doesn't hurt to plant the sunflowers right in the middle like that so I can have a look out there.
Well, you know, a lot of people do it and they don't notice any differences at all. Usually when I hear or see more of it, it's when there's a lot of, like we talked about, under a bird feeder, so there's that kind of concentration. But if you notice that things aren't growing or a particular plant isn't growing really well next to a row of sunflowers, maybe you don't want to plant that next to a row of sunflowers. But I wouldn't say don't plant sunflowers or don't plant it in the middle. Just be aware of it.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yep, thanks for calling. And Harold in Madison, hi.
Hi. I'd like to talk about how to get rid of a couple of problems that seem to be continually. I have continual problem. One is wild strawberries. They got into my ground cover bed, my green ground cover, and they just kind of took over wild strawberry plants. Then the other one is violets, wild violets. They seem to get in everywhere.
Okay. Well, violets are controlled the same way you do with Creeping Charlie. Violets actually are easier to pull out, so individual. But if you choose the herbicide, it would be the same thing as you would use for Creeping Charlie. Wild strawberry, usually don't get a lot of complaints about that, and they do hand pull fairly easily. So I try to do that. The violets, I would really concentrate on trying to get those pulled like now, because they produce another flower under that's not showy underneath the leaves. And those violets are seed spitters, so they throw their seeds. So I'd want to get them out before those secondary ones that they spread even more. So I think both are pretty easily controlled by hand.
There you go. Thanks, Harold, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have another Facebook question from Sue, who was trying to get rid of buckthorn and garlic mustard. Actually, they did pretty good on that, but now they got what looks like carrots growing.
Well, I was going to say, there's lots of things in the carrot family that we usually throw into the weeds. So everything from Queen Anne's lace there's a huge number of different things that are in that group. So sometimes that would be one that most of those are biennials, prevent them from producing flowers and going to seed. So that may help cut down on them.
Talking today with Barb Larson. Barb is the horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County and has been with us a number of times over the years on Garden Talk, and it's always a great pleasure to have her with us. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your garden today. The flower garden, the vegetable garden, a little bit of a look at the lawns as well with our guest for today, Barb Larson. Barb is horticulture educator for Kenosha County, and always fun to have her with us. Barb, thank you so much for taking time.
I'm really happy to be here again.
Well, we have lots of things that we can talk about, and certainly I want to give folks an opportunity to use my Facebook page. The Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. Sometimes people get that confused with my personal page, but it's The Larry Mueller Show. And as a matter of fact, we have Brian sent us a photo on The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, a couple of photos of a weed, and wonders what it is. And it has a kind of a pretty bright purple flower.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's actually a pea-like flower. And it has a compound leaf with kind of rounded leaves on it. And if you look closely, what I noticed in order to not only the pea-like flower and the clusters, but the other is that it looks like a black locust. And it is related to black locust. In this case, it is what I've always called a bristly locust. So it's Robinia hispida is the botanical name for it. And I guess a couple of people guessed rose acacia, which is another common name for this plant. And it is shows up pretty much all over especially the eastern part of the U.S. And he's talking about it being weedy. And it certainly can be, just as our native black locust can get weedy. So this is a shrub. So any kind of control measures would be, you could dig it out, but I have a feeling it has a lot of suckering with it, so that might be a big job. So this is one that probably the best way to do it would be in the fall. Cut off the stems and then paint the stems with a brush killer or something like that, similar to what you would do when you're controlling things like buckthorn and other kinds of our kind of invasive woody plants.
Randall in Crown Point, Indiana, has been waiting quite a while. Randall, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was actually calling today because a couple of months ago, me and my friend started growing some hot plants. We wanted to make some homemade beer, and we wanted some homemade hot plants to do it with.
Sure.
We're having all kinds of trouble. We've never really done any gardening before, and we're having all kinds of problems
getting some of them to even grow. A lot of them are getting dug up and eaten, and we're just having all kinds of problems growing these things.
They're getting dug up and eaten, so you have like rabbits or groundhogs or something like that?
Rabbits, groundhogs, squirrels, everything will grow these things up. It's like candy to everything out there.
Okay, so usually the best way to keep away those kinds of critter pests is to fence off things. So try to put up some sort of a chicken wire or actually a finer mesh fence than that. Usually, even small rabbits will go through like quarter-inch holes or something. Mm-hmm. So they have to be pretty fine. And put that around your plants and see if that helps keep those critters away.
Yeah, there's some fact sheets out there. There's actually a one site you might go to is Gorst Valley Hops. It's a commercial company right here in Wisconsin, but they grow hops and help farmers grow hops. So they have, I think there's some information on Gorst Valley Hops website. It's G-O-R-S-T. Valley Hops. You might give that a try as well.
Yeah. We have a couple of agriculture agents, especially in the north, Vernon County and up in that area, mm-hmm. that do a lot of work with hop growers and also the grape growers in that area. And so they're pretty good about it. But you could, since you're in Indiana, Purdue Extension, there's probably somebody that may be able to help you with that too.
They might even have a fact sheet on it.
They might. I don't know. There's not a lot of fact sheets out yet on especially backyard hop growing, but there are a few. So try a Google search and put EDU on it or extension if you're trying to find one of the extension ones.
Yep. Good luck, Randall. Thank you for calling. And I want to give Paula a chance in Algoma to join us. Hi, Paula.
Hello.
Hi, Paula.
How are you?
Good.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
I have or had a beautiful Quonset cherry tree in my yard. It's about 15 years old. And this year it has about 4 inches of new growth on the ends of all its branches. It's loaded with buds, and it's not doing anything.
Yep. We lost and are continuing to lose a lot of fruit trees from the weather, the cold winter. And so especially any of these that were in that kind of borderline hardy, it was just too cold for them. So many of them started kind of sprouting and got a little bit of growth out, but they're just not doing anything. And I think this is another one where you're probably best off looking around for a replacement.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
yeah,
Paula.
We got kind of bit by that cold.
And Greg in Waukesha, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello. We have a really pretty Leonard Messel magnolia, mm-hmm. one of our favorite trees. It has scale insects from... Last year I had them, and then this year they kind of came back with a vengeance. And I've used neem oil with dish soap and sprayed about 5 times now, and then one spraying of dilute pyrethrin. But I'm wondering, what do I really need to do? It was recommended to use a systemic pesticide, and I don't want to use anything that will hurt the bees and
okay, so anytime we're working with any of the scale insects, they're very difficult to control when they're in that adult or kind of in that scale, especially if you don't want to use a systemic, and even some scale insects, even systemics, don't work really well on. So the control for them is to try to catch them when they're in what's called the crawler stage, which is the larval or immature stage on it. And timing is absolutely critical for it. So you have to be able to know when they're out because they're very tiny and hard to know. So we often look at, you know, when other certain, what's called phenology. So when certain things are at certain stages of bloom or something like that. This is one of those that's so specific, I don't keep that information in my head, but we do have, I'm almost positive, a fact sheet on magnolia scale at that hort.uwex.edu. And you should be able to find it there, and it will tell you what to do, what to use, and the timing for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if for some reason my memory is not right, which does happen more often than it used to, you can always call your Waukesha County office and they can get that information to you.
There you go, Greg. Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Jean in Madison, thanks for waiting.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have I have two problems. It's a country lawn, so I'm not looking for perfection here, but I have a black medic plant, which has taken over in spots, and also the pineapple weed.
Right.
Can you tell me how I can control this, if there's something I can do now or wait until the fall and then the spring to treat it? Or,
well, I think these are ones that I actually had somebody bring in black medic this week into the office. So did a little memory research on it, and it's an annual, but it comes up really early. So from what I could see, I didn't find that they're actually even recommending a pre-emergent on it. But I don't know that how early you'd have to get it on. You know, maybe that's a possibility, especially if you would use something like the corn gluten, which is also a fertilizer. So I'm also, since you said this is a country lawn, do you fertilize your lawn at all?
No, all of a sudden it has taken over.
Well, and see, this is what happens sometimes with lawns. Even a low care lawn, it's important to get fertilizer on it once or twice a year, because otherwise, so what you want to do is you want to get those grass plants growing vigorously and thick enough so that the weeds won't start taking over. And so by fertilizing, then you are encouraging the lawn, the grass to grow. And, it'll encourage the weeds, but hopefully it thickens up to reduce your weed pressure next year.
But then if it's an annual, will it die out this year?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yep. It will. Oh, okay. Well, then would it help if I overseed then come, you know, in the fall?
Well, it depends on how thin it is. Find that usually we don't recommend fertilization unless you have a higher maintenance lawn, which yours isn't. So you don't want that 4th of July fertilization. So wait until about Labor Day and then fertilize the lawn Labor Day. And then you may want to think about repeating fertilizing about Memorial Day next spring.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that'll give me some time.
Yep.
Timeline here. Would that also be the same for the pineapple
seed? Yep, similar.
Okay. Oh, thanks much.
Yep. Okay.
Thanks for calling. We have Lisa, who Facebooked a question to us and said, purslane is taking over her garden, almost a carpet, and I hand-weeded as much as I could, but I've noticed it re-roots like a sedum. Any ideas on how I can keep it under control without chemicals?
Eat it.
Yeah.
It's edible.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I have tried it. It's a little too green tasting for me. So I know that's not probably the answer she wants. It is another one that comes up from seed. So after you pull those out, get that mulch down, and so it helps reduce those seeds from germinating in there. Cover them up.
Jim in Arborvita, hello.
Hello. I have a question about a lawn. We had a very nice lawn for years, and over the years the trees have grown up, and so now it's mostly shade, and so we don't have much grass left. And I hate to fertilize a lot because we're on a fairly steep hill to the lake. So I'm wondering if there are any ground covers or wildflowers or something that we could plant that would do well in the shade?
Well, since you're in the arborvitae area, I would look at what are the natives in your area. And you've certainly got lots of shade natives up in there. And it's probably one of the sandier soils, so look for whatever basic, don't dig up out of the woods, but basically what you find growing in the wooded areas in your in that area. And some of the
have a lot of ferns, would that
yep, work? Ferns would be great. Make sure they're ferns that would be, I always think of, because I love it, because it reminds me of when I was a kid up north, sweet fern and some of those kinds of things. So I would, which isn't a true fern. But anyway, I would look at ferns, but there's also other kinds of things. Sure. Perfect.
And where would you go to buy those sort of things?
You could look at some of the good gardens. You do have several garden centers up in that area.
Yes.
So I would go in there and say you want something native that grows in your area.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Jim. Thanks for calling. And Mona in Madison, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you? I have a question. I know about Queen Anne's lace. I know what that looks like. But there's a new weed, I think it's called Hogshead, that's supposed to look a lot like Queen Anne's lace that's really bad, poisonous.
Hogweed.
Okay.
And you could tell the difference because it's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
high, but like when it's first growing,
yeah,
how do you tell?
But everything is bigger about it, so it's bigger, more vigorous, that kind of thing. So there are, because of the problems with it, and it is it's one of those contact irritant poisons. There are lots of information, and I think probably the DNR has information on it. And there's some of the invasive plant sites. So probably the Midwest Invasive Plants Network will have really good pictures on it. So you can look online and find good photos of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, because all I've ever seen is saying it looks just like Queen Anne's lace, only bigger. But I'm thinking, well, what about when it's little?
Yeah.
So, okay. Do we have it in Dane County yet?
No, we don't. Not heard of it in there.
Is it like in Sawyer County?
I don't remember that we've got it. There may be one or two places in Wisconsin, but I don't remember what they are.
Okay.
It's been several years. But if you go, the invasive plant site will have that information.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Matt in Fitchburg, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a horrible, horrible problem with the evil, dangerous Virginia creeper. It's everywhere. It's all over my yard, and now it's like everywhere I look, literally. Not that I'm obsessed with it, but I'm one of those people that's deathly allergic to it. And I was wondering, do they have any natural enemies? Is there any insect or animal or any way I could...
Okay, so you made an interesting comment in there. You said, I'm deathly allergic to it. Virginia creeper usually is not a problem for most people. Sure, it isn't poison ivy that you have in with your Virginia creeper.
I'm positive.
Okay.
Because you get a rash?
Yeah, really bad. Like, very similar to poison oak, poison ivy. But it is Virginia creeper for sure. I mean, it's creeping all over my house and garage.
Okay. All right. Because often you find them together, and the Virginia creeper is the five leaves, but mixed in there, we'll often find, because poison ivy also will vine. So it sometimes will mix in with the Virginia creeper. They're woody plants, so they're a vine. So you would use, that's one where I would make a nick or a cut in the stem close to the ground, and then use a brush killer.
Yeah.
And just paint it in those areas, you know, in a fresh cut.
Or maybe have somebody do it for you.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you've got that much, I'd hire some, and you're having that many problems, hire someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Good point.
Thanks for calling. Jeremy on Facebook said, you know, weeds aren't much of a problem to me since I started lasagna gardening.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, because he layers and keeps everything out low down, probably. Anything coming up from the ground, sure.
And we have another Facebook question from Ruth Ann in St. Germain, in that area. We're experiencing new leaves on trees turning red.
You know, usually when they turn, yeah, I was going to say, that's stress. And so there's any number of reasons for stress. And I can't remember up in St. Germain, of course, you've got the sandier soils, you know, what may be going on with the amount of rainfall. I know certain parts of the
it's
state.
It's usually a rain issue.
It's usually too wet or too dry. Or some other kind of stress-related thing in the plant. We're talking to Brian Huddleston. He's starting to see a lot of canker diseases coming in, which is where the fungus grows underneath the bark and then cuts off the sap flow, too. So who knows?
Interesting one, a question on Facebook from Ellen. A question for you, Barb. Why do my radishes sometimes go to seed without ever producing a radish underground? I seem to have this problem a lot.
Yeah, usually happens when the temperatures shift really quickly. Radishes like cool temperatures. And I don't know where Ellen is, but some parts of certainly the South Central, we've gone into mid and upper 80s. So we went from cool, wet to, it was rainy and overcast and hot and humid, but it was hot. And that causes the radishes to bolt or produce that flower and seed stalk. And then all the energy goes into the seed or the flower and not into the root system.
Here's another comment from Door County. I'm in a constant battle. This is Barb again. Bindweed? It may have entered my garden yard from a load of topsoil a few years ago. Bindweed.
Bindweed is a real problem, and it's a perennial. So it says they're pulling, constant pulling, little herbicide, and that's basically what you have to do with it is keep after it.
It's in a vegetable garden. That makes it even worse.
Right, and you definitely don't want to. This is another one where it's important to either pull it or keep that from seed production because you don't want it to spread more. Yeah, I have bindweed in my yard too, and I have to keep at it.
You have to keep at it.
Yeah.
Well, we have to. We're starting to get to that point where we better not keep at it because we're almost out of time here. I was trying to find there was one other. Of course, I can't get my.
You can never find it on the computer when you want.
And it was, somebody had said that they were using eggshells, broken up eggshells in their tomato garden to provide calcium. That really, unless you do that over time.
Well, and it still goes back to the problem that it's not usually a calcium deficiency in the soil
right. That's
the cause of blossom end rot. It's a calcium deficiency in the fruit. And it's because the calcium tends to kind of sit in the older parts of the plant, and it doesn't easily flow with the water into the fruits. So that's why the recommendation is to try to do that.
Well, Barb, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again.
Thank you.
Looking forward to having her back. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County, and she will be back and we'll visit with her again. Looking ahead to Monday, Dr. Michael Guerin with us to talk about who is a good candidate for bariatric surgery and what that procedure entails. And then you know what? It must be the last Monday of the month because the weather guys are coming by to talk about the summer forecast and how it is shaping up. Thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.